Well, thank you for your bravery, stuffing yourselves in this room. It's a wonderful opportunity for me to be in Perth, and I thank you very much for providing that opportunity. It is always such a joy to be able to travel and to speak Dharma and to learn from people. I'm not sure which is the greatest joy. They all kind of bundle up into one another. I admire your optimism asking a celibate to speak about love, sex, and relationships. And I'm just as curious about as you are about what it is I'm going to say. Luckily, you added a little rider on that in a spiritual, right? In a spiritual path, as a spiritual path. So, you know, I can get my feet wet by starting in there. But as for the love, sex, and relationships, well, look who you're asking. Oh, I was married once. I think everybody should get married once. And you know, some people do it right, don't they? Some people do it right, and isn't that a joy? When you see two people working really well in a relationship, isn't that a joy? And isn't it rare? Yeah, it is rare. But that doesn't make it any less joyous. So I'm going to start with the spiritual part. Is that all right? I'm going to work my way into it here. First of all, I think if you're a human being, you're already spiritual. Would you agree with that? You can't help but be. But whether or not you're brave enough to admit your spirituality, that's another ball game, isn't it? Or maybe I should say soccer game, is that? Rugby game? What? Footy, that's another footy game. They'll never understand me when I go back to Canada. Because a lot of fear gets in the way, doesn't it, from being spiritual? My sister, my oldest sister, who is the oldest of the family, you understand, still wonders when I'm going to grow up and get a job. I think she goes something like this, grow up, settle down, and get a job. There's some up and down about it that I have never got the direction right, so I've never done it. But I presume one of the reasons why this was a main topic and why you wanted me to start with this topic was because it probably has great bearing on your own lives. I would presume that's true. Is that why? So I'm going to tell you what I think makes a spiritual being, and then we can go from there into love, into sexuality, and into relationships. Is that reasonable? To me, a spiritual being is someone who has a sense of joy about human consciousness. We're talking human being. What makes a human consciousness different from the other animals is the concepting. Do you agree? Mm-hmm. Have you seen any animal that's good at making a thermostat, for example? Or an automobile, with or without leaded gas? Have you? Are good at cutting down forests or things like that? Any? Met any? Beavers, but we're not in Canada now. But do you understand what I'm saying? Like, there is a whole concepting energy that humans have. Do I have any arguments about that? There's always somebody who thinks I'm attacking animals when I tell you how dull they are. So we'll just get that out of the way first. Can you hear me at all back there? Oh, that's wonderful. Because from that point of view, from the point of view of seeing cause and effect in very selective ways, animals are duller than humans, aren't they? Do you agree? And if you don't agree?
I disagree.
Do you?
I see a lot of animals with humans, and the animals become dull.
I'm not sure what you mean by dull. Did you hear his comment? Yeah, I'm not sure what you mean by dull.
Lifeless and passive, not enjoying themselves.
Yeah, okay, but I'm not talking about domesticated. I'm talking about concepting, being able to hold concepts. I'm not saying it's a blessing or a curse. I'm saying animals don't do it. What do you think?
Well, I can't think of an animal. I can't comment on it.
Yeah. And so I'm just saying this is a difference between humans and animals.
We do not really know that. The only reason why we do not know whether a dog doesn't have a concept is because we do not know how to speak dog. Okay.
Oh, I don't agree with you at all. I don't agree with you at all. Have you taken a dog for a walk?
No, not really.
Ever? So when you say the word walk, what does the dog do? When you say the W word, what does the dog do? Huh?
The problem is that the dog doesn't speak human either.
Oh, no. Yeah, and what else? Goes and gets the leash, runs over to the door, runs back. Oh, you're going to take me for a walk? Oh, a walk? Oh, my God, I get to go for a walk. Right? Doesn't it? And just like, and then you say, oh, wait a minute, I forgot to leave a note for Mary or Jezebel or Harry or whoever it is, and the dog follows you. And follows you over there. And then the tail goes up and down, and the ears go up and down, and then they sort of nudge you a little bit, and you say, okay, we can go now. And they, walk. Right? And then you open the door, and that dog is through that door, and then circles around and comes back and bangs against you and goes rip, rip, and yo, yo, and right? Is this whole kind of thing going on, right? I mean, you know that moment, that dog doesn't go for a walk by themselves, is totally pinned on going for a walk with you. Isn't that true? Absolutely delighted. It's going to go for a walk with you. And you are the great hero, and that dog knows you finally figured out the true meaning of life and is taking him for a walk. Right? So say you're walking in the woods somewhere, and the dog runs around and sniffs everything and then runs up and catches up with you, and then you throw a stone, and, you know, but you're still going for a walk and the dog is there, right? And then a rabbit goes across the trail. What happens to your walk with the dog? It's gone. It's gone. Why? Maybe later the dog, but you listen to that dog yipping. Right? Have you done this? How many of you have done this? I'm not exaggerating. What? Yeah, and I'm not exaggerating, am I? It's really straightforward. But when that concept is clear, the dog is working with it. But then when one sensual impression comes in that's stronger, I'm not saying humans don't do it too, I know. I too remember my adolescence. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, but I'm saying that with animals, it's harder to hold the concept in the same way, isn't it? So you all basically agree with me, except for one or two who... Okay. I hate to tell you this, but I'm probably going to need a jug of water if I'm going to keep... one of the difficulties that humans have is that they can concept so well, isn't it? Do you agree with that? But yet, if you can, as a human being, with your beautiful ability to hold concepts, begin to consider long-range cause and effect, as opposed to short-range cause and effect, that's what I call a spiritual being. If you can see, how many of you have read Alice through the Looking Glass and Alice in Wonderland? Many of you read that? Oh, what a group. What an excellent group. This is definitely a high quality group here. Do you remember that part in Alice where she's in the boat picking the bulrushes? Do you remember that part? Alice is riding in a boat on a river, and there's these really beautiful bulrushes, and she just keeps, oh, this is really lovely, and she picks an armful, and they smell so sweet, and she's smelling them, and then she takes her nose out of them, oh, and she sees some more, and so she throws them in the back of the boat, and she pulls another bunch, oh, there's some more. And as she throws them in the back of the boat, they start fading. And she always sees another armful. And her pulling at the bulrushes is what propels her along the stream. Short-term concept. She doesn't have any sense of the direction that her desire is leading her. Short-term concept. That is not what I would consider spiritual. And yet, when we're in the process of life, oh, isn't that wonderful? A jar of water is working its way toward me. Long-range concept. Thank you so much. That's great. Oh, great. Slave labor, too. Perfect. Wonderful. Thank you. So when we're in the process of experiencing desire, has anybody in this room ever experienced desire? Let's see. Oh, yeah, one or two. That's good. That's good. So you're not going to find this too strange if I talk in these terms. When you're in the process of experiencing desire, and if you don't get caught up in just immediately gratifying that desire, what happens to it? It changes. Sometimes it absolutely goes. You're right. But certainly there are changes in it, aren't there? That first impulse, which is fine when you're two, to have that first impulse of desire and reach for something. But by the time you're 20 and 30 and 40, maybe you've learned not to grab so quickly. But maybe you've learned in rather unfortunate ways. Maybe you've learned in a way that makes you feel you don't have the right to desire. But nothing exists in this world without desire. So you're not going to be able to kill the desire without doing great harm to creation. Do you understand that? So if you think that to be spiritual is to kill desire, I think you're wrong. And if you think that renunciation is on about saying no, I think you're wrong. Renunciation is having a full belly and then realizing that that is not really where you want to go. Renunciation is on about deepening love, not fear or hatred. Is that good? So that someone who is spiritual, they may very well be a renunciate, but they are not an enemy of desire. They may very well realize that short-term desires are unsatisfactory, right? But they don't think that you have to get rid of desire. So I think that's very straightforward. Do you agree? Do you have any question about any of that?
What do you do with a desire?
And that's a real dilemma. Did you hear her question? What do you do with desire then? And that's the real dilemma. Because if you have to do something with it, you're in trouble. If there is some sense of that you are lesser or it's fearful or you're vulnerable or you don't know what to do, not vulnerable. Vulnerable is fine. But if you don't think that there is some sense of exploration possible, you allow the desire and then you allow your long-range concepting beautiful mind to start working. But don't make them enemies of each other. If you feel desire, don't immediately attack it with your beautiful concepting mind. Or attack yourself, or attack what you desire. A lot of people do that, don't they? They really want something, but they cannot tolerate the sense of maybe they won't get it or the failure. There isn't a sense in people's lives that we are in refuge. This is refuge, that we are in a place that we deserve to be. So you get greed. You know, in Buddhism, they say there are three main types of beings: greed, hatred, and delusion. It's simple, eh? That's the entire of the universe explained to you now. Now what'll we talk about? Politics? No. And the thing about greed and greed types is that it's never satisfied. Why? Greed, they say, is like a leaky bowl, a bowl with a crack in it. The crack is that sense of some point in the heart that feels like it really doesn't deserve anything. So no matter what it gets, it's not going to be satisfied. You've got to reach for the next one. You can't actually appreciate what you get. Caught up in the reaching. Does it sound familiar? Hatred is like a bowl with a little bit of poison in it. Whatever you get in the bowl is tainted by the poison. Does that sound familiar? You get a pair of pants, you really like them, and then somebody else gets a pair. So those ways of working with desire are destined to bring pain or non-satisfaction of that desire, of desire, non-satisfaction. Yes.
So, with desire, you can act on it without putting a definite attachment to it. Is that what you're saying?
I think if you pay attention, see, usually there is a very definite self involved with desire, isn't there? I want to eat. Give me food. Huh? In the Tibetan tradition, there is this lovely figure called Vajrayogini, Dorje Pomo in Tibetan, Vajrayogini, and she's like a red hot tomato, is what she's like. She is this transcendent bliss of desire without subject or object. So in the ultimate sense, I would have to say yes. But unless one is understanding the ultimate sense, you could get into a lot of trouble. So I can say yes in this context. Ultimately, yes, because from a Buddhist point of view, all beings are destined to awaken. And all desire will eventually become the desire to come out of ignorance. See, the awakening means the cessation of ignorance, either willful or unwillful ignoring. Mm-hmm. You know, you sometimes willfully ignore something, you know that. You choose to ignore something. You know it's there, but you just, oh, I didn't see it. Oh, I don't know how I slipped up on that one. Dear me. But it's considered in Buddha Dharma that the original mind, the original state, is one of enlightenment. And it's only a matter of time before all consciousness moves to that point. Okay? So all desire is somehow or other trying to move toward the cessation of ignorance. The great desire is for non-clinging, compassionate awareness. That's the Buddhist perspective. And all lesser desires are the best way you see toward getting closer to that. And in the tantric tradition, for example, there seems to be a very close parallel between bringing all of the energy toward the point of union with at-one-ment and the sexual act of orgasm. The rock and roll starts with sex here. Did you plan that?
Yes, just
What a guy, eh? But although that's true, that in some particular practices of the Tibetan tradition, one either uses a partner, a consort, or images a consort in order to bring all of the energy to that one point, which happens at orgasm. Do you understand what I'm saying? You don't do that until you have gone past possessiveness. So, yeah, if in your life you have moved beyond possessiveness, then certainly use desire. But if you haven't done that, you could get into some trouble. No? Is that good? Yeah. And people misunderstand this point very much. You often find people who've read a couple of tantric books or something, and then they go on and on about how they're practicing tantric sex, you know, like, oh, give me a break.
Doesn't look tantric to me. Excuse me, your lotus is slipping there.
But again, going back to the idea of spiritual, if you are going to approach anything as a spiritual person, let alone love, sex, and relationships, then I think, first of all, you have to pay attention. He is good. Can you turn it off now? Can you all still hear? Sorry? They go for a long time too, don't they? Okay. So I'll just carry on. Then presumably you have learned at some point that whenever you put more weight on one side of your skin, like either consider other people more important than you, or you more important than the outer, more important than you, or you more important than the outer, that there are always repercussions. You have noticed that, have you? That there is a backlash from that and some pain. You have all noticed that kind of thing. And particularly, I think you would notice that in terms of speech. Would you say that's true? That if you try to change, if you use your speech in a way to try to change your relationship with the outer world, then it's only a matter of time before you don't trust what other people say. Have you noticed that? If you tend to, when you're talking, you tend to slightly exaggerate things a little bit. Just slightly, you understand. Just to get your point across. I mean, we're not talking lying. Just, you know, coloring it so people will understand you better. Then it's only, and if you make a habit of that, it's only a matter of time before you actually feel that everybody does that. And you really are justified because you're just like everyone else. And then you get to a point where you actually get a kind of excitement out of seeing how you can just get away with it. Have you noticed that? Some of you have. And then you start thinking that the excitement, because you feel real when you're doing it, that is to say, you feel, which you consider to be real, that the excitement is, you know, that's right, that's normal. You understand? So then you're an addict. Aren't you? You're addicted to that way of living. If you live any way you live where you have a certain kind of excitement as opposed to a kind of an evenness of expression, even ongoing joyousness, that's the way you should be as a human being. Did you know that? But do you see how much you'd have to give up in order to do that? All your little dramas? Huh? Your little moments of getting reassurance from others? Isn't it true? Or giving reassurance so that you know how important you are? You know, who knows? Well, who cares? Either way, any way you want to play it, we all play it, don't we? working really hard and then collapsing. Collapsing really hard and then working. They're all the same, though, aren't they? They're all those things of making one side of your skin more dense than the other. And then setting up a relationship between the two. And then looking for people who will play that relationship with you. But I got news for you. They're never going to be satisfactory. Because the maintenance level is high. It's worse than owning a yacht. You know, yachts are compared to black holes in the universe. You know, they just keep throwing money in. Well, this is the same. So in that sense of desire, don't even try it. You won't survive. But that's okay, because none of us are going to survive anyway. But you won't like what it is that doesn't survive. And that's not okay. That's not okay. It's not okay to live your life so in any way other than that you are willing to die right now because you like the state of your heart. Huh? The only desire in the long run that really pays off is if you have a sense that right now you are in the most loving state you can be and you like it that way. And if you died at this moment, it would be without regret. If you can be in that state, and I don't mean because you finally got the bastards. You know? If that's your trip, that's okay, you can do that. But it won't end. The next round is the bastards finally get you. And then the round after that, you know. It's what I call equal density. Equal density on both sides of your heart, both sides of your skin. If you can have equal density on both sides of your skin, both sides of your heart, and then allow your concepting mind to find ways to play with life around you. What other relationship could you be in but a loving relationship? Because you won't be regarding either yourself or other as more or less powerful, more or less out to get you, more or less out to get you, out to get them. You're willing to be vulnerable because you're meeting a vulnerable world. Does that make sense? So then, if you have any relationship, those moments when it's less than perfect, you don't worry about them that much. You don't try to hide them or dress them up or down or in or out, because that's where a lot of trouble comes, doesn't it? When you're trying to hide the state you're in or hide from the state you're in, hide from the other. I realize I'm talking a lot about ideals right now. I hope you forgive me, because I know you asked the question more for personal, you know, daily ho-hum, it's Monday, oh my God, what do you mean you didn't buy milk? Right? That's where the relationship, that's where you want to know, isn't it? Is that right? But maybe some of this has some point for you. And especially if you would be willing to try this with me right now, just close your eyes for a moment, or not, as you wish. Okay, everybody's got their eyes closed. Quick, Eric, run around and put... Oh, no, no, no. No, no. There's not room enough for them. We'll wait until half these people have left, and then we'll do it. No, no, no. I call it a sense of humor. Okay. So your eyes are closed, feel your body. Feel how you feel in your body. Feel how you feel in the middle of your neck. Okay, how about, 6 inches down from the middle of your neck. Now imagine someone who is really kind to you. It can be anyone. Like your mom. Someone who is really kind to you, your child. How does that feel? Now imagine that feeling in everyone else in this room. They all feel the same way. Now imagine someone you would like to be able to have a dialogue with. Feel yourself still being aware of how you feel when you're with someone who is kind. And presume that that person that you would like to have the dialogue with is kind. Okay, if you want to, you can open your eyes. Could you feel that sense of imaging someone you were kind? Could you feel a difference in your heart? Difference in your body. So if you were in a relationship, if you made a point quite regularly of just feeling yourself in the presence of someone who is kind and then imaging the person you're with as kind, you would get out of the habitual kind of stuff that creates havoc in a relationship, doesn't it? It may, but any wall has two sides, and I've always noticed if you remove one side of the wall, the other side is a lot weaker. Whereas if you wait for the other side to go.
And if the person's not kind?
I'll just hold that question for just a minute, okay? I think also that if you are willing to hold your own sense of the desire to practice kindness without submerging your intelligence, okay, then you are kind, and then you expect the other person to be kind. And if the other person is in the relationship because they want to get into an excitement relationship as opposed to a love relationship. Remember I said excitement was like addiction? I lived with a man one time who really liked beating on me because he thought that was a good way, you know? I mean, it seemed reasonable to him. It's very strange, isn't it? And you know what I learned from him? How to practice loving kindness. Because strangely enough, whenever I was practicing loving kindness, he just didn't hit me. It was very strange. The doorbell would ring or the siren would go off. Uh, Okay, I just want you to know that there is nothing more powerful than love. I do want you to know that. The other thing I'd like you to know is that if you really stop trying to change the other, maintain your sense of kindness and don't submerge your intelligence, any situation will change. A certain amount of your resistance. Would you agree that sometimes people are in abusive relationships because of pride? Sometimes? Yeah. But can you be proud and love, practice love at the same time? I know a woman who is probably going to be dead soon because she bloody well won't give in. Go ahead. No, hopefully you can, but like I said, don't submerge your intelligence. I'm saying, don't submerge your intelligence. And if you're really practicing loving kindness, one of the things you do is you don't allow someone to do something that you know you would be sorry they did. You know, if they really are that stupid, they may be going to do it, so you call the police. Because you don't want them to be that stupid. Yeah, but that's out of love, not out of hatred, not out of fear, not out of pride, not of I'll get you. I know I'm talking ideal, but if you work from that feeling of kindness within, you'll have much better judgment. And certainly don't bury your intellect and don't say all life is one and all that stuff. No. No, not unless, like one of my beloved teachers says, one what? Does that satisfy you? Am I? No, I'm delighted. I think it's. I just want to make sure I'm not being flippant or superficial, because I don't feel the least bit superficial about these issues. Okay. Sorry. Again. Yeah. Okay.
Can I just ask something? Where does fear come in then? That's not a desire, is it?
In my experience, first of all, I would like to tell you that whatever arises, arises because there is cause. Okay?
But like in that violent situation, I mean, lots of people don't leave because of fear, but that's not a desire.
No, but that's when fear becomes so strong that they're paralyzed, right? That's when they don't leave.
Is it because they don't love themselves that much?
Maybe they're numb. Maybe they don't even have any sense that they have any self to love.
Well, that might have died during that relationship, mightn't
it? Well, it probably died before the relationship, or probably the roots of it were there before the relationship. But is that your situation?
No.
So I would prefer not to get too theoretical, or, you know, if someone has such an abusive relationship, I'd be glad to talk to them privately, but I don't want to get too theoretical, you know, because it's very personal, I think. These issues are very personal, don't you? And every situation is slightly different. You know, I don't like general statements about this kind of stuff. I can say that we're all here because we're ignorant. I can say when I look into my heart, I see very few things that I would not do. I would say if the circumstances are right, I'm totally untrustworthy. I would tell you that one good brain tumor could really change my personality. I know these things about myself. I'm not the least bit impressed with my own saintliness. I know what humans are capable of, and I know I'm human. That's the only advantage I have, that I choose to be as loving as I can every moment. And I make that an octave, active, ongoing, absolute choice. I don't know whether I really would be capable of some of the things I've seen in my heart. But I know the seeds are there.
And all of us.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So these are the kind of general statements I can make. Who have I not abused? Who has not abused me? Who have I not loved? Who has not loved me? This is an easy general statement for me to make. Do you understand? I don't think there's much I'm not capable of. Now that doesn't scare me. It used to scare me. I used to dress it up, you know? Oh, I'm nice. Oh, hide my teeth. I'm nice. No, I don't have teeth. Oh, hide my claws. Oh, I'm nice. Now, hey, you know, I take my teeth out and wave them in public. And I wish you many hits. May you never run out of dealers. But you don't need to. That's right. But action will occur. You don't need to. I'm taking the you to be a little sense of density on either side. A willingness to move with what arises. So what I would recommend if you're a couple is that you make a date. What, once every 2 weeks? Is that reasonable? Does that make sense? You make a date and you meet each other and you prepare however you wish to for that date. But when you're in each other's presence and the date starts, you spend a certain amount of time just sitting across from each other, just looking into the other's eyes, touching their hand, okay? Like this, pardon me. Okay, your hand is there, and my hand is there. My hand is there, and your hand is there. So your right hand is on top of their left hand, and their right hand is on top of your left hand. Got that? You're sitting across from each other. You're looking into the other person's eyes. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm stopping now. Thank you. And you're looking at each other, and you're very relaxed. You have that sense of kindness in your own heart. Okay? You look at the other person, and when they are breathing in, they press down on your hand a little bit. Okay? When they're breathing in, and you breathe out at the same time. And you imagine that it is like the energy of God flowing into God, if you use those terms. Is that clear? Is that clear? You're looking into the eyes of the other and you're aware that you are moving the divine breath from one to the other. When they start breathing out, they stop pressing your hand. And you begin to breathe in, and you press their hand, just slightly, right? And you become aware of breathing in God. Is that clear? And you just look at that person, and you start letting go of who you think they are. Just look into their eyes. You need to be relaxed. No alcohol, no drugs. Is that clear? Because you don't want anything other than just this experience. Believe me, you couldn't handle more. So you do that for no more than 10 breaths. And then you just sit there, just touching hands, and you wait to see what arises next. And take it slow and be vulnerable. Is that good? So is that relationships? How's that for a celibate? Yeah? Yes?
That vulnerability you talked about, what happens if we do get wounded in that vulnerability? Is that a real wound?
Everything that is a wound is a real wound. And any real wound is a wonderful way for you to realize where you were practicing ignorance. A lot of people think I'm very cruel when I say things like that. But I will tell you, I learned that by practicing ignorance. And I love now, because I can't afford not to. Yeah, can't afford not to. The world becomes too small. Too much pain.
So what if you really can't communicate? There's no wavelength that you can find conceptual.
Stop trying. Stop trying and see what is being communicated. Something's holding you together. Maybe it's the trying. Maybe if you stop trying, maybe what you're communicating is, oh, gee, let's go our separate ways. And maybe that isn't. Maybe it's just the trying has putting an unnecessary weight on the circumstance and it will change. Stop trying and go into the joy of being who you are, vulnerable, and see what happens to the wall. You have to take risks, though, don't you? It's like the arms race, you know? Okay, you get rid of your bombs. Okay, but you get rid of yours first. Okay, but you get rid of yours first. Okay, but you get rid of yours first. And then the walls come down, then there's all these arms hanging around, you know? And like, oh my God, you know? Better not to stockpile them in the first place. I was raised to be honest, you know. In my family, it was a mark of major pride. You know, family pride? Have any of you ever experienced that? Well, in my family, it was poor but honest. Not so much poor, but the honest was really stressed. So, of course, out of great compassion, the compassion of the universe supplied me a husband who couldn't help lying. I mean, the man opened his mouth and he told lies. You know, it was just, was perfect. Nothing was more suitable. So after a few years, our marriage finally separated. We worked very hard at it, both of us, in our own unique ways. At staying together. And so then the marriage separated. And I went on 5 safaris. It's an excellent way to end a relationship. Kenya. It's really worthwhile. Did you know that pythons have toes? I never knew that until I separated.
Is that a lie or is it?
Check it out. Check it out. And then I went to France and I did a 3-month retreat. And about 6 weeks into the 3-month retreat, I just finished sitting. And, you know, like I was just reviewing the meditation. The mind just happened to drift to some more of the, yet more of the lies, yet one more time, just yet once more. And the music on the elevator went, you know, and then he, and then he, and then he, and then he. Because after all, I was raised to be honest. You understand? And I thought to myself, and I have no defense against lies. Ha 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 And because I'd just been sitting, the mind was fairly clear, and this belly laugh came up. And I was rolling on the floor, roaring with laughter, saying, "That's a lie! That's a lie!" Wounded, huh? Have another look. It could just be a doorway. But how are you working with it? Do you have enough room to work with it? Well, maybe you need to go on a safari. You know, really. Really, maybe you need to change the circumstances to see that as a door. Yeah, but so then, how to allow the sense of grief and pain and anger and stuff like that to come through, so that because you don't want the wound to putrefy, you want it to become a door. Yeah. So you have some work to do, but I congratulate you. It's a wonderful opportunity. You know, in Buddhism, they say that if someone steals from you, you have the opportunity. You almost missed it because somebody stole from you. You have the opportunity to practice generosity. Quick! Before you call the police, offer it to them. How are you doing? Should I stop or are you okay?
Okay.
So I was in a place in British Columbia, and the car I was in was broken into. I had some money I was carrying in my wallet pay for oil. You know, you have this thing called winter in Canada. The white stuff happens on the road, on the ground, and ice and stuff like that, you know? I don't know if you've ever heard of that stuff. They call it snow. Snow. So you notice it's just past the snow period, so I'm going back to Canada soon. So I had some money in my wallet to pay for oil, but then the car was broken into. I just got my first pair of bifocals, and it was in my bag. Money was broken. As soon as it was taken, as soon as I realized it was taken, I immediately thought, whoever you are, I'm sorry that I didn't see you before you performed this action and that I couldn't give you the money. But I sure would like my bifocals. Please take the money. But I just got them glasses, and I really would like to have them back. So 8 months later, I get a phone call from the RCMP. That's the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. They do the policing, the federales kind of stuff, you know. They say, "Are you Miss C. Keywatt?" I said, "Sometimes." They said, "You know, we just, you know, I had filed and all that." They said, "You know, we never find this stuff." They said, "It's very strange, but some Boy Scouts were walking along along the roads collecting beer cans and stuff for a drive, and one of them decided to head off into the bush between no and where, somewhere on the road, you know? And lo and behold, walks right across the path, and there's my rotted purse, cloth purse, pretty well rotten because it's rainforest kind of stuff, you know? And there's my wallet and my bifocals." It's impossible, you know? Yes? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know that if you are going to have something that is going to cause, you know, pain for someone else, be willing to pay the price. If you are willing to have a society where no one is caused pain, well, maybe we're going to have to relook at whether or not nuclear families are a good experiment. It's only been around since the Industrial Revolution. Maybe we want to change our minds. Maybe we want to look at communities again. You realize that it's only since the Industrial Revolution that there was wages, so some labor was paid more, you know? I mean, as an overall fad. But we have an opportunity now, what with computer chips taking over so many jobs. You know, maybe it's time to make the great leap backward. Because forward looks kind of scary to me. Anyway, what else? Love, sex, and relationships in the spiritual life. How is that? Does that feel satisfactory? You've been very patient in this warm room. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
It's good for me.
Was it? Was it as good for you? Very good. Sorry? Anyone? So you can feel that lovely warm spot again in your heart, that vulnerable feeling. Just imagine it like a gold light. It spreads out through your body. Pours down your arms and your legs, your head, up your head. Pours out through your pores in every direction. Fills this whole room. Moves out through the ceiling, down through the building, through the earth, in every direction. Permeates all matter. Wherever there is suffering caused by ignorance, willful or unwillful ignorance, of body, speech, or mind, this gold light just temporarily assuages it. Whatever wholesomeness we have gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness we have gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Whatever wholesomeness we have gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is less suffering. Thank you for your great compassion. Thank you very much. Thank you.